This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Today's podcast is sponsored by The Morning Navigator, a daily newsletter written by Tony Greer, who is a 30-year veteran trader in the financial markets. I think it's important to be responsible with your personal finances and investments, and it's hard to do that without understanding the markets. Now, this is where The Morning Navigator fills a specific need for me. If you're looking for actionable trade ideas or simply to educate yourself about the markets, then The Morning Navigator will help you to do both. It's an interesting, informative, and amusing daily read. Now, a subscription to The Morning Navigator normally costs $60 a month or $650 per year. However, my listeners can go to tgmacro.com, sign up for a free one-week trial, and apply the code ZUBY, Z-U-B-Y, at checkout for a discount of either $10 off the $60 a month subscription or $100 off the $650 annual subscription. As you can infer, the annual subscription is a better deal. Either one is a win when it comes to understanding the global markets and managing your personal investments. So once again, you can sign up today for a free trial at tgmacro.com. tgmacro.com. Go check it out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunting and destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Obane, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on a fellow independent artist. He's recently been touring throughout Europe. He's got a whole bunch of releases under his belt. And this is Jonas. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate you having me.
That's awesome, bro. Yo, I've just done a real brief intro right there, but tell the people who you are and what it is that you do.
I'm Jonas, five letters, one man. I represent the people from New York City. I'm a recording artist. I've been doing it the last 7-8 years independently. And just lucky to have been born in this day and age where the independent artist has a pathway. So I'm just looking to keep it going.
Awesome, man. And how did you get into music?
So I got into music early on. It was kind of forced upon me at first.
Okay.
My mom said I had too much energy. So she put me in different classes where I could kind of get that energy out. And one of those classes, or two of those classes, were music-based. I went to like a drum class, and then I also played violin. And so I did that for about 9 years. Took a break from that. Just somewhere in high school, I rediscovered my love for music and more importantly, just, you know, really got into the hip hop scene in New York. And it was kind of history from there.
That's awesome, man. So did you grow up in New York? Is that right?
Yeah. Born and raised in New York City.
Okay.
South Bronx.
Okay, cool, man. And what was that like for you growing up?
It's crazy. It was crazy. Being a first generation American, my mom being from Uganda, my dad being from Ethiopia. Mm. It was very interesting because, you know, American culture is one that's very brash and in your face. And if you don't have the right guidance, you know what I'm saying? You got to learn those things on your own. You know what I mean? So I was kind of just out there, you know, learning everything firsthand. I had nothing passed down to me in terms of like the do's and don'ts. And so it was interesting, man. But I think that's the best way to learn. Looking back, I wouldn't change it. But New York is definitely very fast paced. And for kids, it's crazy. You learn things super early. You know what I'm saying? Like you learn how to defend yourself. You learn how to throw a punch. You learn about girls and drinking and drugs and all that. But by the time you're 10 years old, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. No, that's interesting, man. I mean, I've been to New York a couple of times. I was just there in November last, and it's a really interesting city, but it's one of those places I can't really imagine growing up there, you know, like obviously a lot of people do,
yeah.
But
first time I ever went there was as an adult. And every time I'm there, I'm kind of like, man, like this would be a weird place for a kid to
Right.
grow up. I don't know. It just doesn't strike me as a young person. Well, young people as in, you know, like maybe in their early 20s and stuff, but
right.
Yeah. Even young, when I walk around, yeah. Even when I walk around New York, I don't really see children.
Right.
No, exactly. Like I don't see kids.
right. It's super weird. And growing up there, man, it really is a trip. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it gives you those street smarts, you know what I'm saying? And by learning things early, I feel like you're better prepared to go out into the rest of the world and to have like that adaptive nature where it's just like, all right, now I'm thrown into, you know, I was just in Europe and in London, and London's very fast paced. But I felt like I picked it up in 24 hours. You know what I'm saying? I knew the ins and outs and I knew where to go, where not to go, you know, in all the different spots. And I think that's just, you know, something you kind of, you know, you kind of inherit, you know, growing up in New York. So it's got its pros and cons. Yeah, but yes, it seems like there's no kids there.
yeah, it is weird. It's just one of those strange things I noticed. I was like, where are the children? How did you find London? Had you been there before or was it your first time?
Nah, I'd never been there.
Okay.
That was my first time in London. I liked it. I think everything is really spread out, which makes it interesting. You got to take a lot of the public transportation, which I think actually helps you get the lay of the land. But you know, if you're trying to take Ubers from place to place, I mean, they could rack up, which I learned my lesson the hard way.
No, I don't recommend taxi and Uber in London unless you absolutely have to.
Exactly.
How do you find it compared to New York?
I thought it was, obviously there's the whole thing where the traffic runs in the opposite direction, I'm about to cross the street and I look left and almost get hit by a bus coming from the other side. And I was like, oh, all right, I got to look both ways out here. But you know, that's just one of the obvious things, but culturally I think it's cool. It was one of the places in Europe that I felt like a little more comfortable just cause you know, there's a lot of diversity there. Mm-hmm. You know, as it is the place where a lot of people do go and visit. And so I feel like culturally there, they play to that, you know, they understand that there's going to be a lot of different people from different parts of the world. So I just thought it was cool for that reason. And I just think architecturally it was awesome. Just looking at, you know, some of the different building structures and the different houses and stuff like that, you know, so I thought it was really cool, you know, and I definitely want to go back when I have more time.
Yeah.
And I'm able to kind of soak it up even more.
Awesome, man. And was it your first time in the UK period?
The first time I was in the UK, I think I was too young to even remember.
Okay.
I think my mom had taken me when I was maybe 4 years old.
Okay.
So I consider it my first time. Yeah.
That's cool, man. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed my country.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's awesome.
I'm not the ambassador of the UK, but I like for people to come here and enjoy it.
There you go,
man. And what other cities did you perform in Europe?
So I was we did about 4 or 5 cities in Germany: Munich, Stuttgart, Dusseldorf, Frankfurt, Berlin.
Nice.
Forgive me if I'm forgetting one. So we did that, and then we also did Vienna, Austria.
Oh, nice.
We did Amsterdam, which was really cool.
Yeah,
it's always cool going to Amsterdam. We did Switzerland as well.
Awesome, man. In those, like, in German speaking countries like Germany, I haven't yet performed in Austria, but in Germany they love hip hop, man.
Oh yeah,
they love hip hop in Germany, dude.
Ooh, yeah. Their energy level is ridiculous, man.
Yeah,
I like to think of myself as somebody who has like a lot of energy, and I could get down with the best of the rock stars when it comes to just like drinking and being out and about. But man, I'm telling you, I think I met my match.
Okay,
yeah, Germany is you know, they're wild.
Yeah, they love it. Do you know what I love about Germany and also countries like the Czech Republic, kind of like Central Europe as well, is they love like hip hop, you know, like,
right.
They love, like, you we're now in this time where you've got a lot of different kinds of hip hop.
Right.
And what I find that is in continental Europe, they kind of like straight up hip hop, like, you know, rappity rap, if someone wants to call it, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
Like just rapping bars, not like
Method Man. And
Yeah. They love that. Yeah. Not like the weird mumbling and tons of auto tune and, you know, all of that. That's and I think both of our styles in terms of rapping are more lyrical focused, wordplay, being able to understand every word. It's more traditional in that kind of sense. You know, I was listening to, I've been listening to a lot of your tracks, and you know, there are bars. It's not just, I don't know. We live in this time. I don't know what you think.
It's not fluff, and it's not, you know,
it's not
hiding
just like
behind melodies and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's like, okay, he's saying something, you know,
right, exactly.
Okay. There's lines, there's thoughts that's going into the lyrics. We live in this time where it's, it's strange. It's like the lyrics are kind of an afterthought to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Yep. The lyrics almost, I hate it when people kind of say lyrics don't matter. Like, I feel a part of my soul gets hurt when people say, but that's real. What a lot of people think now. So it's refreshing to hear that and just be like, okay, cool. Like, there's actually some content here. It's not just
absolutely
live. Yeah, man.
Yep.
So tell us. Awesome, man. So tell us a little bit more about how you got into hip hop. I mean, of course, growing up in New York, I assume that was a pretty huge influence just everywhere.
Oh yeah. I mean, hip hop, you go out for recess at lunchtime. And you know, you would hear, you know, the newest mixtape. Back then it was mixtapes. We don't have mixtapes anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, you know, back then you would, you know, literally just at recess, at least where I went to school, which was in East Harlem. That's where I went to elementary school. And, you know, Biggie used to hang out across the street from my school.
Okay. Right?
Biggie, Mace, or the whole Bad Boy family. I felt like hip hop was very much still a part of the community, if that makes sense, where, you know, rappers weren't afraid to be outside. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They weren't afraid to be outside. They weren't afraid of the violence that occurs nowadays. And, you know, I think it's a very unfortunate now that you've got people that, you know, like Nipsey, RIP, you know, just people that are just trying to be cornerstones for their neighborhood can't even do that anymore. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the level of envy, you know, the level of conflict, I think has gone up. You know what I'm saying? And so it's a lot of, especially as young black men. And then, you know, police brutality is always still around. You know, that's been around, you know, since the police force was created. And so, you know, it's tough. It makes it tough to be in our communities and be tangible and be people that we can, you know what I'm saying, touch and feel and see that the dream is very real.
Yeah.
You know, now we have to discover pretty much everything from a distance on the computer or on your phone. So, you know, for me, it was like hip hop was there. Right. And this is the era where there's like still boom boxes, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that, where people are playing music, not in their headphones for themselves, but playing music for everybody, you know what I'm saying? So you would literally hear it everywhere. And so from the age of 5, or as long as I can remember, you know, hip hop has been, you know, the background music to my life, and has been, you know, a huge part of my life and my music experience.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's natural that, you know, my first album was actually a cassette. It was Mace's Harlem World. That was my first album ever.
What was your favorite track on there?
Oh man, I don't even know if I could pick one.
Mine is a take.
Tell me
what's yours.
What you want from me.
Okay.
We had that joint. What else we had? I mean, it's just so many.
And it's just over there looking at me.
Girls up in here.
I love that.
Yeah, man. So it's just, you know, it's just, you know, hip hop was fun. You know, there's just a great energy about it. It was very fresh and new too at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's just supernatural that something that I turned to, you know, later in life when it was my turn to get, you know, my creative energy out. Just because it had been part of my life since pretty much day one.
Yeah. There's something you said there which struck me when you were talking about how artists can't sort of be there in their communities now like they used to be able to. Why do you think that is? What is it that you feel has changed?
Man, I just think, I think it's deep, you know, I think it's from a psychological standpoint. I think it's the generation that we have now. The hip hop community has not been taken care of, the way that it should have been taken care of. We've been treated like a stepchild, until now, us, you know, hip hop and rap being the number one genre in the world. But up until this point, it was like being treated like the stepchild, and more importantly, the communities in which hip hop come from, like the communities where it comes from, have been neglected. You know, we've gone through the crack epidemic, which a lot of people feel like was, you know, purposely implemented. And, you know, just the poverty levels, and eventually, like, you know, like my man Tupac said, it's like, we're going to try sing our way through the door. Yeah. Right. And it's going to be a gentle melody because we're trying to convince you to let us in. You're not going to answer the door. All right, cool. Now that beautiful melody is going to turn more into a little bit of a chant. Right. We're going to be like, yo, let us in. We out here trying to get some food. We see y'all in there. Y'all got all the food. And then you don't let us in. Then eventually it's going to be the type of energy where it's like we're kicking in the door. And it's going to be a very forceful thing. And I think we've entered that point. And so to kind of circle back to answer your question, it's like, I feel like the same thing is happening to our artists. You know what I'm saying? It's like you look at certain artists and you think, okay, that's a prized possession. If I tag him, if I get him, you know what I'm saying? Now I got the juice. Now, you know, I'm that guy. And so it's like a power struggle. Which I feel like is going on. And also just there's a lot more envy, you know, because people have less and less and less. And it's like, you know, it seems like the only way to get an opportunity, or the only way to get change your situation, is to do it by force. And so it's just, everything is force now.
That's a shame. I mean, I asked that question because, I mean, even with New York City, I mean, as far as I know at least statistically, it's a lot safer now than it was in the 90s, or maybe even in the early 2000s. So sort of despite that overall decrease in crime, I'm just curious as to what it is in people's mindset and mentality that has sort of changed in that direction, that they would, you know, target people who essentially are even from their own community, right? These are the people you were mentioning, Nipsey Hussle. And of course, one of the saddest and most shocking things about his death was, you know, this was in his own community. This is a guy who is there helping, giving back, doing charity, employing people, all that kind of stuff in his own neighborhood, and who hasn't just thought, okay, I got the money, I'm bouncing, I'll see you guys later.
Right.
He's doing what he can. And so I think one of the saddest things, you know, beyond a young, talented man losing his life, of course, I think one of the saddest things was just those sort of circumstances around it. You're just like, man, like,
yeah,
come on, man. You know, like, I see stuff like that and I'm not from that area. It's not my own community, but it just kind of makes me shake my head and be like, man, like, this is the problem here. You know,
yeah.
How are people going to behave like this?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree 100%. And then a whole another thing to that is like, it's the gang culture. You know what I'm saying? Like, gang culture has grown, especially in hip hop. And, you know, half the artists you see these days are affiliated somehow, some way. And so I think that's another part of it as well. That's unfortunate, you know, carrying that energy into the music business, which has always kind of been there, but I feel like now it's more popular, you know what I'm saying? And that now it's more in your face. So, you know, that's a whole nother side of it. But I think too, it's like, yeah, crime in New York has gone down. Then you look at like the situation going on in Chicago, you know, and LA is always LA. And, you know, there's different pockets where I think some of these things happen. And, you know, I feel, you know, it's super unfortunate, but that's why I try to promote a more positive direction for, you know, people that listen to my music. You know,
sure.
I still talk about the harsh realities. I still talk about the things I've been through. I still talk about, you know, how certain things, are, you know, certain injustices. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I try to at least finish the message with something that, you know, is pushing forward.
Sure.
Something that is going to help to grow the culture and to progress the culture forward. And at least, hopefully I do, my little part,
Yeah. Well, dude, that's important, man, because the way I look at the world is, everything ripples outwards.
Right.
So whether you put out something, whether you put out positive energy or negative energy through your own life, the way you live, your own music, the messages you're putting out there and everything, I wouldn't play down how important that actually is. I think a lot of people play it down, but we're all like nodes on a network. Everybody, especially these days, we're all like 1-2 degrees of separation away from each other.
Yep.
So if you put out something positive, especially as an artist, right, you're reaching thousands, hundreds of thousands of people every year.
Yeah.
So if you can give them something positive, I do believe that that has a ripple effect. And the same goes with negative. You've got people, who are influential to millions of people, and it's like, okay, I can see both sides. On one hand, there's the, okay, it's just entertainment and someone might just be doing that. But if certain artists are crossing that line between just commentating or sharing their stories versus glorifying.
Right.
Right. To me, that's there is a line. I don't think all artists go one way or all artists go the other, but there's certain stuff in hip hop where it's kind of hard. If you're being honest, it's kind of hard to argue, okay, this is kind of
right.
this is just glorifying this.
Right.
Thing.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing.
How do you know where that line is? Mm. Right. Cause our biggest job is to make a track sound good. Sure. You know what I'm saying? For all the listeners out there. So I'm curious to what your take is on where is that line? You know what I'm saying? Like if you're going to talk about something, and it's controversial to that degree, and there's a chance of you glorifying the street life. Where do you draw that line?
Yeah, it is a tricky one. I mean, there's a Jay-Z lyric that always hits me. Where he said, "Hove did that, so hopefully y'all won't have to go through that."
Yeah, right.
Like to me, that's kind of the line. You see, where like you're showing both sides of it. Where it's like, okay, maybe I did this and that, but here's the opposite side of it. Or, but my homie did this and he's dead now, or he's in jail now.
Right.
This person is, or whatever, right? Not just like, okay, you can just totally live this life and it's great and there's no consequences, there's no downsides. This is the thing to do. Like to me, that's when it starts going into glorification territory.
Okay. So talk about the consequences.
Yeah, the consequences, gotcha. Right? The consequences and sharing the both sides of it, not just the let's do this drug, let's sell this crack, let's do
right. It's like, makes perfect sense.
That's where I think that's where the line is. And I'm very much big on individual responsibility. I don't think that in a perfect world nobody would listen to anything and take it totally on board or seriously. But again, if we're being honest, if you've got someone who's in a vulnerable position and maybe their parents aren't around or they don't have a father figure and they're just being led, I'm not in the camp of thinking, the music is the reason for the problems, but there's some stuff where I'm like, I don't think it's helping. I don't think it's helping. I think, cause I mean, you make music, I make music. So I'm sure you've certainly seen the positive impact that your music has.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
And everyone accepts that part. So I'm like, okay, so on the flip side, nobody can tell me that it's not at least possible for it to also have a negative impact. If it can have a positive impact,
right.
Of course it can have a negative impact. So
absolutely. Yep.
I just think everybody, I don't know. I don't want to dwell on it too long, but in terms of your own music, we talked a little bit about how you got into it, but what was the first thing you put out there? What was your first project or single or mixtape, or when did put out your first project?
It's funny when you get into like recording, and this is the part of, the journey that I think not a lot of people talk about, and maybe, you know, I don't know, but maybe it's just me, but I went through a phase where it's like you have to learn how to project your voice in the studio into in a way in which you're going to like what you hear back. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You go through this phase where it's like, I don't like how my voice sounds. Yeah. So the time in which I started recording and then the time in which I started releasing music, there's like just a gap there. Cause I really wanted to master the craft, right? Cause sure. I really actually cared about it. And, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, when people first hear me, you know what I'm saying? It's something that I can stand behind and say, all right, this is my best work at the time. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, I could leave it all on the field, as they say. So I started recording back in like 05, 06, 07, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Then recorded for like 2 years nonstop. I would take the train 2 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
To go to a studio in Brooklyn because it was the only studio I could afford at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I would take that journey 2 hours there, 2 hours back. So 4 hours total every day. Wow. Yeah. And, you know, I really started to hone the craft. And I was actually appreciative for that time I got to spend on the train because I would write more. I would rehearse more. I would memorize the tracks and edit them in my head so that when I got to the studio, I wasn't wasting time doing that on paid time. So, you know, that was kind of cool process for me to go through. So yeah, I recorded for like two years or so. And then in 2009-ish, I started releasing like music, 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. It was just singles. That's back when MySpace was still like the place to drop like music. Mm-hmm. And so I would like, you know, you know what I'm saying? I would like put music.
I still miss it, man. I'm not joking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I loved is that it was just one platform.
That's it.
Just one platform. Just send people to this one place. Not here's my Facebook and my Instagram.
Right.
And my Twitter and my YouTube.
And my Spotify. And yeah.
It's like just one place, man.
One place, you know, one stop shop. Yeah. And you got a chance to really, you know, that's where I discovered Drake. Right. And that's where Drake really blew up. Like he blew up on MySpace because you were able to go to his MySpace and just indulge in everything Drake. And he was popping.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I would release songs there. I had a little audience, but you know, I always looked at it, as, you know, just a taste tester, right? I could, no pressure. I could put music on there. And I know at any moment in time, if the song is whack, I could take it down. And then it's like, it never existed. Yeah. Right. And so I would just use that as, you know, as like a focus group, and ask people their opinions. I would message hundreds of people a day, you know what I'm saying? And I would follow people, ask for the follow back, man. Yeah. Back then there was no bots and stuff like that. Like you had to put in the work. And so I would be behind the computer all day. Besides when I'm in the studio and I would just literally hit people up. What do you think about this song? Follow me if you like it. If you hate it, let me know that too.
Yeah.
So at least that way we're engaging, right? And so I was like, all right, cool. And so I used that to really build my confidence. And then once I started to get to a point where people were consistently saying, all right, this is dope. I sort of found my stride. Mm. And then I put together a project called The New Golden Era. And I, you know, it had samples all over the place, so I couldn't really put it on iTunes at the time.
Sure.
So I just had it on MySpace, which is also a cool thing about MySpace is you could put it on that platform and not get tracked down by Universal and Sony and all the big monsters out there. Right.
Yeah.
And so, so it's just really cool, that I had the opportunity to really hone my skills. But yeah, around 2008, 2009 is when I dropped some of my first stuff. And I consider The New Golden Era my first mixtape, and then I Am Us was my second mixtape, which came out in 2010, and then from there I released like an album a year, pretty much up until now, and now so I'm working on like my eighth album. So
awesome, man. Yeah. What was the first song you ever put out that really resonated with people, and that, because I find with all independent artists, I think all artists in general, it might not be their biggest song now, but there's always that first song that's kind of like your first personal hit in a way.
Yeah, yeah. It was a song called Banga.
Okay.
B-A-N-G-A.
Okay.
Yeah, a song called Banga because we thought it was a banger. Yeah. And it actually turned out to be one. You know, it's just, you know, in that small world and community that we were in at the time. But to us, it was huge. But yeah, it's a song called Banga, featuring Natasha Alexander, who's out there somewhere, still singing and still doing her thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was just a song that came together so fluidly, you know what I'm saying? In the studio, it was just one of those, that's when I really understood studio magic, you know what I'm saying? And there being an energy and a spirit in the room. You always hear like artists talk about, oh, there was just an energy in the room. We can't describe mm-hmm. it. That's when I discovered what that was, you know what I'm saying? Okay. When the synergy just moves, and from the engineer to your friends that are in the studio, to all the artists that are a part of the song, when everyone's tapped into this one wavelength, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And everyone's on that wavelength, and it almost seems like you're in a dream. That's what I think all artists continue to strive for. Cause once you hit that, it's like a drug, you know what yeah. I'm saying? You want to get that on every song because you know those ones are special. And so that song had that energy in the studio. We knew it was going to be, you know, one of those songs. Mm-hmm. And then when we put it out, man, you know, Billboard gave us a songwriting award for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. And, you know, people just really received it so well. And, you know, the feedback was crazy. So that definitely has to be the first one that was like, okay, wow. You know, mm-hmm. this is what it's like to have one of those special moments.
Yeah. No, I think with every artist, I think you get, like different levels of hits in a way, right? You know, I'm not necessarily talking like, you know, Billboard number one or something.
Right, right.
There's always that first song that's like, okay, like this is the one that's getting 90% of the attention yep. kind of thing. Like, you know, I've made yep. all these other 10, but this one people really, you know, gravitate towards. And you tend to have like a couple of those. Maybe that one gets you there. And then there's another one that gets you there. And yep. it kind of seems to go along that path for a lot of artists.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works.
Yeah. So let's talk about you being independent, man. I'm also an independent artist, so I love speaking to...
My man, salute. Man.
we even started actually around a similar time. So when you were talking
nice. About
adding people on MySpace and getting the follow back,
yeah.
I was like, I know exactly.
Uh-huh. Designing exactly the page.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you've been on the grind for a while, man, because...
Right.
Of course, especially in the social media age, you'll have people who are discovering you every day. And mm-hmm. what's weird with music especially is that people see the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. Right? That's why when I do these conversations, when I talk to people, I like to rewind back because, you know, I get people who come across me now and they think that Zuby just started existing in 2020.
For
and
sure.
I'm like, you've missed so much of the grind, you know, like... Because I don't know if you know, like last year I was on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah.
Congrats on that, by the way. That's awesome.
Thank you, man. Yeah, it's like one of the biggest in the world. And so people were like, oh, like this guy's just like turned up and got on the show. And I'm like, dude, like you missed so much.
Oh, yeah, man.
I didn't just come along and like knock on this door, man. It's been a long grind.
Right, right.
And there's still a long way to go, you know.
Like, what do they say? Say it takes 10 years to be an overnight success.
Yeah, I even think that's an understatement.
For sure. I think 100%.
It's like 15 to 20.
Yeah, man.
Most people anyway. So talk about, tell me a little bit about why you chose to be independent and how you found it's evolved over the time, because we both started out at a similar time prior to when nobody really knew what streaming was. I guess MySpace was technically streaming, but
yeah,
I don't think people even called it that at the time.
No, no.
I don't think the word existed. This is like prior to iTunes, really.
Mm-hmm. Back then it was downloads.
Yeah, downloads and physical CDs. And you've seen all of these transitions. So how have you, what's been your response to that? And how have you managed to sort of go through these different transitions, especially as an independent artist without, I don't know, getting derailed? Or how have you taken advantage of it all?
I'll be honest. The first thing I'm going to say on that is that I have no idea.
Okay.
We can prepare for the next wave as much as humanly possible, but mm-hmm. we can never predict it. Right. So you might be preparing for something that is not actually the catalyst moving forward. So you just never know. Like Facebook changes its algorithms now on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So I could be preparing for one thing that's doing well for us right now. And then all of a sudden, in a week's time, it changes. And now we're back to square one where we have to learn an entirely new scenario. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just kind of being open enough to accept whatever comes, right? Yeah. And to not scoff at it, or to not be the type of person to be stuck and say, you know what, you know, when MySpace was popping and then YouTube started to become the thing, instead of saying, oh nah, you know what, that might be too hard, now I gotta think about videos. Mm-hmm. No, what I did is I, you know, went and talked to a lot of my friends that were in the video world, and it was like, yo, what does it take for us to put a music video together? What kind of cameras do we need? What type of budgets do we need? And then I worked my butt off to figure out that next wave, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when Mac Miller, RIP, and Rex Arrow, they were leading the way with the music videos. They were dropping like a music video a month.
They were going hard,
like,
man.
They were going hard, man. Yeah. And it was like his own TV show. Like,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And so, I just always made sure to be open to whatever it is that may come, and to also always be paying attention, because the moment you're not paying attention is the moment you fall asleep, and is the moment you get left behind. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, thankfully I was always up on my toes. I was always reading different articles and making sure that I was doing my best to be in the know. And I think having that characteristic alone allowed me to adapt anytime something changed. And so I guess just being open, right? Just being open to the possibilities as an independent artist. And, you know, the reason I became an independent artist and decided to stay independent, because we did turn down some label situations, was because, you know, I really do believe in owning my masters and, you know, owning my publishing, more importantly. And, you know, just being in a position where I can control the quality of the content, and also the pace of the content. You know, I think one reason that a lot of people right now are going through like these mental health issues is because there's such an immense pace that this content needs to come out in. And you've got these young kids, it's like 18 to 21, and you're throwing them into so many different situations all over the world, day after day after day after day, hour after hour after hour. You're driving these kids crazy.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know what I'm saying? And so I don't have to do that. Ain't nobody telling me when I got to drop something. You know, I can take my time if I need the time to make sure that it's done right, you know, or I can speed it up if I feel like I need to speed it up. And so I think that's a very important thing to have, like, in this day and age, you know, just to keep your mental state at a place where it's healthy.
Yes.
And to also keep your creative space in a place where it's healthy. Because I think if you try to force things, that's when you come out with terrible music. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going so fast.
Yeah.
You don't really have time to even sit on a song for more than a week in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, man.
And see if you still like the song after 7 days. And so I think being independent is just so beneficial for all those things. And I think the biggest benefit of being independent right now is that it's lucrative. Right.
Sure.
Back in the MySpace days, it was hard to convince people to go to iTunes. There was no Apple Music. It was iTunes.
Yeah.
To convince someone to go to iTunes and spend $9.99. You know what I'm saying? Nowadays, you spend $9.99 and you get every album that ever existed. You're able to stream it. And so I think that transition is one of the best transitions possible, is that we can make money off streams, and which is an easier threshold to convince people, you know, new listeners to give you a shot. You know what I'm saying? So
that's so interesting, man. See, that's one place where, cause I used to primarily sell CDs, right? I was a very physical based artist. I'm not someone who, like, I was so resistant. I'm still a little bit resistant to streaming.
Right. You know, like, I'm with you.
Cause I remember when streaming started up and I was kind of like, yo, wait, hang on. So I'm here charging like £10 for my albums.
Right.
Now you're just like, y'all are giving like everything away for free and you want to give me like
pennies on the dollar.
Dude, yeah, for years, literally. I mean, this might be one of the mistakes that I made in hindsight, is how resistant I was to it. Because, you know, rather than embracing it and thinking, okay, let me make this thing work for me,
I was like, no, like I'm not directing anybody towards towards these streaming sites and stuff. So I think I was a little bit short-sighted in that regard, but you know, I was making like 90% of my income
right
physical sales.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, I can't just give this up to get a fraction of what I'm currently making. So,
yeah,
you know, I've worked it out and made up for it in other ways over the years. Yeah. But that's one aspect in my music career where in hindsight, I'm kind of like, I should have kind of jumped on that early and really embraced it and whatever. But, you know,
that's a learning lesson. That's exactly. And so you can only grow from there. We're using like PayPal stuff to like, and then shipping CDs out.
Man, I was just street hustling primarily, bro.
Okay. Yeah.
Street hustling. I would just travel all over the UK, go to different cities with my headphones and my MP3 player.
That's awesome.
Bags of CDs. And man, I sold well over 20,000 albums on the streets of the UK, just going up to people, talking to people.
That's 20,000 people you met in person.
Dude, I've met over 500,000 people.
I've met over half a million people. That's amazing. You can't replicate that.
No, you can't. So I am very grateful that I did do that, because even now, you know, especially when it comes to online stuff, I do get a lot of people now like, dude, how do you deal with all the online stuff? Like, especially on Twitter. Like, Twitter is my big one, you know. You know, I've got hundreds of thousands of followers on there, and I receive all sorts of stuff because I'm at the edge of a lot of different worlds. So I'm in like, you know, music and the politics world and like this world and that world. So
it gets
spicy, you know.
And I put out
my spicy opinions too, so it's like, oh boy,
right.
I enjoy it, but a lot of people ask me how I deal with it all, and actually, a lot of it is because I developed such a thick skin from all of those years hustling.
There you go.
But it's like, dude, I've had people ignore me, insult me, call me like I've had every rejection under the sun when you're just out there in some random city trying to hustle your music. So that's face to face. So dude, if someone wants to just like send me mean tweets, I don't really.
That's nothing.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's nothing.
I'm like, this is nothing, man. This is fine.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the future. So you've just finished your European tour. You're back in the US now. And where do things go from here?
Honestly, just picking up the consistency, just because I feel like it's time to really focus on not only the quality but the volume. Mm-hmm. Just because I have given myself these breaks. I had a daughter in 2018.
Awesome.
She's about to be two. So you know, I wanted to try my best, you know what I'm saying? Try my best to balance between family and music, and I've failed a little bit at balancing, you know, because it's really hard, especially you know with a career that requires you. It's not even an option. If you want to succeed, it requires you to be in a major city and on the road constantly. And so, you know, for me, you know, at least giving it a shot to try and have that balance was something that was important to me. You know, so it took a little bit away from me doing music as aggressively as I've been known to do music. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that being said, now I feel like I'm in a little bit of a groove. I'm really starting to figure it out. You know, after 2 years, but now I think it's the time. And you know, we've got a great team. We've assembled a great team. My manager, publicist, and distribution companies are all in line, and it just it makes sense for us to ramp it up just a tiny bit. So we're going to start releasing singles, starting with the next one called OMG. Mm-hmm. That one's coming out February 21st, and then after that, we're just going to release really interesting visuals, you know, stuff that, you know, makes people think. You know, one of my biggest things is saying that I'm trying to hide the medicine in the candy, right? I really want there to be that message there, no matter how melodic or commercial sounding the song sounds at the surface. There's messages in there that people can discover, right? Little mm-hmm. Easter eggs and stuff like that. So I want to make sure that that's not only in the music, but that's also in the videos. And so we're working with some directors who are writing treatments right now. And that's a part that I'm really excited about. And yeah, so that's the future, man. It's just a lot more, a lot more content. I want to do more podcasts like, you know, this. Okay. Thank you for having me. Seriously, this is my first one. Oh, cool. So this is history right here. Awesome. You know what I mean? And, you know, and just give people the opportunity to see me, you know what I'm saying? See who I am. Like, you know, we used to have the blogs, and the blogs used to write articles, written articles, and people actually used to read at one point in time, right? And now I feel like it's more intimate, right? We need to be in platforms like this, you sharing your story, and whether it's verbing people the right way or the wrong way, right? you're there, and you're making people feel something, which sure. is awesome, right? And that's you, yeah. And you're meant to do that, and so, you know, more of this, and more music, more videos, and just really continuing to tell the story, right? And continuing to let people know that there is a way. When it comes to independent artistry, whether you're somebody who paints on stretch canvases or, you know, you record in the studio all day, there's a way forward. You can control your own situation, your destiny. And if I can be that person to if I can be proof that it works, then I'm gonna continue to push that forward. And that's what my future kind of looks like right now.
That's awesome, man. And is there an overarching message that you want people to get when they listen to your music? I'm not going to ask you what do you rap about, because I'm sure you find that just annoying as annoying as I do, right? So I'm going to ask, like, what's the overall overarching theme? If someone listens to a couple of songs, if they listen to an album, is there something that you want them to take away from that?
Yeah, that you're not alone. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we're out here, right? We're all going through this together. And you know, I think one of the toughest things is feeling like you're alone in your struggle, or feeling like you're alone in whatever it is that you're going through. And you know, feeling like you're not alone can be one of the most rejuvenating and like rejoiceful things, is to say, oh, you know what? Someone understands what I'm going through, you know, and if they can make it through, I can make it through. And I think even just that alone helps to create and form a more positive outlook for somebody once they realize that it's not just them. And so it's inclusive, right? You know, and I that word is getting so cliche right now. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, what is he talking about? Yeah. I just mean in all senses of the word, right? It's to be inclusive. Like, it's just not to discriminate against, or, you know what I'm saying, bully anybody out of a situation. Is to be welcoming and to say, this is the movement, and it's not all pretty daisies and roses, right? Like, it gets tough. You know what I'm saying? We might have to, you know, go protest something. You know what I mean? And we might have to tell people, yo, check yourself, because that's not what it is. That's not the move. Yeah. And that might happen, right? I'm known to curse a cop out, right? Just because, I'm serious, man. It's like, I got to let when something wrong is happening. Yes, sure. Not just for no reason, but
okay, this guy's brave.
No.
I'm in the UK. Like, they don't have guns here.
Oh yeah, well, see, you would get away with it a lot easier than I would. I've been staring at the wrong end of the gun once or twice. But it's just like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I see injustice, that's the biggest thing for me. It's like, you know, to speak up about it. And so that might happen. It's not pretty, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that could get me in a lot of trouble, and has, quite frankly. But at the end of the day, my overarching message is I just don't stand for injustice. And I want to make sure that people don't feel like they're alone. You know what I'm saying? And if I can make music that makes you feel included, makes you feel like you have a family, even though we might not be, you know, in touch in the physical world, but you know, if you can throw your headphones on and listen to the music and say, you know what, I this makes sense to me, that's more than I could ever wish for.
I hear you, man. How has becoming a father changed your outlook?
Whoa. Oh, it's crazy, especially I got a daughter. So that's a whole nother ball game, man. Yeah. It's just
called Real Talk with Zuby.
Yeah, man. Oh man. I mean, it's still hitting me. Mm. I'll be quite honest with you. I've heard it before where, you know, friends of ours or, you know, just people in general say, oh, it instantly makes so much sense. You know, it's like love at first sight.
Yeah.
Like they're covered in blood and it's like crazy. And it's like you're in the delivery room and it's just like, what is happening? Right. Yeah. You're experiencing all this for the first time and it's like sensory overload. And then, you know, you've got your significant other and she's going through the process of giving birth. And then, so you're just like, oh, you're trying to be attentive, but then you got a screaming baby that's covered in blood. And yeah. So for me, it wasn't like instant. Yeah, to me, it was like, man, I'm like on an episode of Oz. Like, this is crazy. And so it was like, you know, it wasn't instant for me, but I think that's also beautiful because then it's a journey at that point to getting to know this new human, right? Mm. And getting to know as she grows, it's like, and develops a personality and is able to talk, right? And is able to walk and form her own personality. You know, we're getting to know each other and it's, I think that's a beautiful journey. So even if it isn't just instant, I appreciate the gradual love that gets built, you know, as life kind of progresses. Right. Yeah. It's just very real, right? You know, I don't want to ever give the Hallmark version of what it is to become a father and like go through that process. It's a very real thing and a very sobering thing as well, which has humbled me. I think, you know, one thing is it makes you aware of your own mortality.
Oh yeah.
Right? Because now you want to be there for your kid. You want to experience all these moments, all the graduations, the wedding, you know, you name it, the proms, everything. Yeah. And the fact that you may not is kind of crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like you start to look at it as like, I'm not guaranteed to be there for that, you know, and that it kind of sucks. It like makes you sad. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hope, you know, and then you get into that space where it's like, I hope I can make it to all those different life events. You know, and so it just really makes you aware.
That's awesome. You know,
that nothing is promised.
Yeah, no, I'm not a father yet. I will be eventually. But the one thing that, I mean, I'm the youngest of five kids, and you know, I've got nine.
Oh, wow.
I've got nine nieces and nephews. So.
Oh, so you got a lot of practice.
Yeah, I've seen the process a lot.
Right.
And you know, one thing that always just strikes me. I mean, it's very obvious. But one of the craziest things about parenthood is its permanence. You know, it's like, it's permanent, right? It doesn't matter how, doesn't matter how old you are. I mean, I was talking to, this is a few months ago now, but I was talking to an old man who was like, I was talking to him and he was telling me about his family. And he was like, you know, I have three children. He was like, I have a 70-year-old.
Oh my God.
I have a 68-year-old. I was just laughing, you know, because I was like, that's so funny to hear. I have a 70-year-old. And it's like, that's still his child, right?
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
You know, like, that's still his kid, right?
Yeah. That's wild.
I was like, man, that's so funny. And he's like, yeah, you know, I still worry about them. Like, you never stop worrying. And I'm like, man, that's just funny.
You know? The question is that still your, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know how they ask that question? It's like, but you'll always be my little whatever, right? My little boy or my little girl. Can you justify that with a 70-year-old?
It's funny, isn't it?
That's amazing. Well,
it doesn't matter because they still remember they were just crapping in their pants and having to change their diapers. And
they're probably back to crapping in their pants at 70.
Yeah, so that was just a really funny conversation. I was just like, man, that's crazy. Like, it never, like,
yeah, the permanence, that's deep. Like, yeah, that's deep, man.
We're just coming up to an hour right there, bro.
Yes, sir. Oh, well, man, flew by.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I'm sure people are going to want to check out your music after listening to this. Where do you direct them to go?
Spotify is the biggest platform for us. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you don't have Spotify, we're everywhere. Apple Music, Google Play, Napster, you name it. Pandora. And so, yeah, just if you have Spotify, hit us there. It's the place where we're most active. I love how Spotify has that, like, the social aspect to it. And yeah, and then other than that, the biggest platform we're on, because I like to direct people to one place and not a thousand, is on Instagram. Instagram is where it's at. You could DM me there, hit me up on there, and I'm most likely to reply to you within 30 minutes to an hour. Awesome. So,
and what's your handle on Instagram?
Handle is at I am Yonas. So IAMYONAS. Yeah, just holler at me anytime.
Awesome. We'll put that in the podcast description. Yonas, it's been great talking to you, bro.
Zuby, man, I appreciate you, man. Like, we just made history right here. It's the first one. Yep. Hopefully not the last. I truly appreciate you having me.
No doubt, man. I wish you all the best this year and onwards.
Thank you, brother.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with Superbeats Heart Chews Advanced. From the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support, the new Superbeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, Superbeats Heart Chews Advanced are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of Superbeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to radiobeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's radiobeats.com, code DEAL.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.